we're going to move right into our guest, which is first Gerald Celente, a legend. I haven't interviewed you, sir, and it's been years. The last time I was filling in for David on InfoWars, it was the month that gold hit its all-time high and broke 2,000 again around August of 2000. And that was a great conversation. And I've wanted to talk to you many times. I see you on with David, you know, every couple of weeks, and y'all have the best conversations. But I have two other folks I was going to do a round table. They've got questions for you. You might have heard of them. The first one is my friend Don Jeffries, is the author of Hidden History and Survival of the Richest. I'm sure a fan of yours. And I'm sure, and we have my other friend is Charlie Robinson, who's a host of Macro Aggressions and author of the book The Octopus of Global Control. Also a fan of yours. So I was like, if you've got questions for Gerald, let's all do it together. And but first of all, welcome Gerald Celente, a founder of Trends Journal. I'm a subscriber, and of course, Occupy Peace, many other great things. Thank you, sir, for being here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And of course, my friend Don Jeffries, the legend himself, he's here. Thank you so much, Don. Appreciate you taking time and coming to talk with Gerald with me.
Oh, it's an honor, especially to be here with Gerald Celente. I've admired him for so long. I had him on my show once a few years back, and certainly he's a man after my own heart, because I came from the left too. You know, I'm a classical liberal and a populist, and there aren't many of us left, are there, Gerald?
No, it's so sad what's happened to this country. It breaks my heart. I mean, the idiots, the little imbeciles, little boys and girls of nothing, telling us what to do. Congressmen, senators, little pieces of crap, spewing out their baloney and making us swallow it is just disgusting. And this last thing they did with this, passing this resolution about anti-Semitism.
Yes, yes.
How about go screw yourself? Who the hell are you talking to? And again, what nobody talks about is that the people running Israel are not Semites. They're Ashkenazis. They're Khazars from northeastern Turkish region. Semites are from the Mesopotamia region by the definition. So the Palestinians are Semites. These are, it's just total crap. Total crap what they're spewing out. And it's totally disgusting how they've robbed us of our freedom and liberty in this country.
Well, there you go again, Gerald, with your facts and figures. that's exactly right. So now you technically can't criticize the Palestinians now if you can't have any anti-Semitism. With that in mind, I'll introduce Charlie Robinson, author of The Octopus of Global Control, Macro Aggressions podcast. And I think this is the most anti-war panel ever assembled.
So, yeah. Makes that Voltaire quote stand out, doesn't it?
You know, you know, I grew up during the Vietnam War. I'm 77 years old. That was right at the height of the draft movement. As a young kid, I was stupid enough to swallow the crap that if we don't stop those Vietnamese, those commies taking over Vietnam, those dominoes will keep falling. And before that, you'll have all of Asia will be communist. And I'm not making this up. The dominoes will be falling. They'll hit the shores of California. I believed it. I believed it as a young kid. And the only reason I dodged the draft is I didn't want to get killed. I'm seeing guys walking up to water this deep with guns over their head and 50 pounds of, you know, on their backs, you know. I don't want to do that. You know, so I did everything I could to beat the draft. Now you got this other slime ball. Every war he loved, he's 3.5 years older than me, by the name of Joe Biden. Five draft deferments. Five draft deferments. Any one of these little boys that and girls that want to go to war, go over there and fight. Send your wife, send your kids, send your transgenders. Go over there and fight. Send your money or shut your mouth.
Yep. But Gerald, Mike Johnson, he's a wartime speaker. You didn't know that?
Yeah.
He's a wartime. I said earlier, pray tell Mike, what war is that? Is it the war against us? I mean, what declared war are you talking about?
Again, that little boy couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag.
Well, he's my age. I mean, he skipped all the wars I was in. Yeah. He didn't like those? There was some opportunity for it to get involved, and I don't know why he didn't do it.
Yeah. Again, they're little gutless. Look at them. Little Lindsay, did you come out of the closet yet, Graham?
Yeah.
Lady G never saw a war that he didn't want your kids to die in.
Yeah. Lady G, that's a good. That's got to be in some kind of address book somewhere in D.C.
Somebody's got that number.
Well, Gerald alluded to it, but I'd love to see legislation, and it would never happen, but introduced to this so that if you vote for war, then you're obviously probably going to be too old to go yourself, but then you have to send your child, you have to send your grandchild or closest relative. So you have a commitment in it, because I think it was during the Iraq War or whatever, I lose track of all the Gulf Wars and everything, but I think it was something like 2 members out of 535 in Congress or something. Yeah. That had relatives serving there. So they don't have an interest in it. You know, they're sending other people.
Yeah. You know, I launched Occupy Peace over a decade ago. And one of the foundation is close all the bases overseas. We got over 1,000 bases, in 70, 80 countries. Hmm. Secure the homeland. Put the troops to work to rebuild our third world infrastructure. And if you want to go to war, let the people vote, because we're the ones that pay for it with our money and our lives. Like you pointed out, these little clown boys don't go fight. So that's one of the foundations of Occupy Peace. And could you imagine if the billionaires put money into a peace movement now? We'd have one. Not a penny for peace.
That's right.
Not a penny for peace.
Yeah, Henry Ford tried that in the First World War. Yeah. Had that. And Don, you've mentioned this. That ship for they don't have any of these billionaires or the financial elite. They fund war, and they're completely new. They don't stand up for freedom, liberty. You know, Gerald, you always say when all else fails, they take you to war.
Yep.
And of course, you founded the Trends Journal, and I love that publication. But what are you? I mean, with now that so much has changed on the rhetoric, and you and I, the last time you and I talked, I started to see the shift where the power structure was starting to turn aggressively towards China, which they had never done because we'd built China up. Zygmunt Brzezinski signed the document on January 1st, 1979, along with Jimmy Carter, saying that we cut diplomatic ties with Taiwan, that it was a one China policy. Now they're funding Taiwan and agitating China in every way. What are you seeing? I mean, this is worldwide. We've got the expansion of NATO that in my opinion caused the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, kind of an existential threat. You have the October 7th event, and now kinetic war between Israel and Iran, which was always about nation states. What are your thoughts on all of this?
You got maniacs in charge. And they're out of their mind, people, and they're just going to keep ramping this war up. And World War III's already begun, as we said. You know, it's when all sales, they take you to war. The economy, the numbers just came out today, the employment numbers, they're down. They were much lower than expected. The PMI numbers came out, the manufacturing numbers came out. They're below 50%. The economy's going down. We're coming into the election, and what they're going to do is they're going to keep ramping up the war, and the morons and imbeciles will follow it, because once upon a time there was a little boy with a pair of cojones smaller than a mothball. Born on third base, thought he had a home run. Little Georgie Bush. You can't find a more ignorant, arrogant piece of shit like him. We're going to get that guy Osama bin Laden dead or alive. 88% of the people swallowed the crap spewing out of that little gutless boy's mouth. Oh, what happened before that? The dot-com bust. Nation was in a deep recession. People couldn't stand Bush. But then 9/11 happened. We're for Bush. We're for Bush. Oh, then he starts the Iraq War after the Afghan War. The people swallowed it. They're going to do the same exact thing. There's going to be a false flag event or something that happens, and the people will rally around. We got to get them. We got to get them. How many people do I know that are, oh, the Iranians attacked Israel. Oh, my God. You know how many times I heard that when that was happening? The people are going to follow their leader. They're going to take us. They're going to escalate this World War III in a run-up to the elections. That's what I see happening. So what's going on with China? What's going on in Taiwan? What's going on with the stupid sanctions they're putting on? How dare China support Russia? When we're sending, what, they just sent in, what, another $60 billion of our money to keep blooding the killing fields over there? How dare those Chinese, how dare those Iranians support Russia? Only we could kill people.
So true.
Gerald, what do you see, though? You alluded to what was happening in Congress, which is one of the most shameful votes. I mean, it was right on top of them waving the Ukrainian flag after they passed the bill. But then they make it. I mean, first of all, they can't even define anti-Semitism. But what I'm seeing now is something I never thought I'd see. And I think it's a culmination of decades of anti-white agenda. They have enabled so many non-white students. And you're seeing it on the college campuses. They look at the Israel-Palestinian conflict and they see Israel as a white colonizer. And they're going to sympathize with the Palestinians. But because the powers that be never want to go against non-whites, there's a huge power structure going, power struggle. You're seeing a debate about Israel and Zionism I never thought I would see. Now they're crushing it. And maybe that vote in Congress is a result of that. I don't know if they typically, when you said about having the people vote for war, I would always say the majority are always going to vote for war because that's what happens. People, you know, fall for it every time. But I'm not so sure in the case if you involve Israel, because now you've got millions of people that look at Israel differently than people historically have. What do you think of that? Because I think it's a huge power structure, Glenn. You're seeing it. And they're cracking down on college campuses. They passed this ridiculous bill to make. They've never made it a bill, you know, a crime to criticize America, but you can't criticize Israel. I mean, I think there are power dynamics going on we've never seen before.
They've been doing. Look what they did with the COVID stuff. How dare you believe you anything that you believe that the government. That the government doesn't tell you you believe in misinformation. Stand 6 feet apart. And don't forget, when you jerk off, you better sanitize your hands. All right? Look at the crap that they make up that they make people swallow. They'll make up anything. The war, this what's going on with this is no different what they did with the COVID war. Stand 6 feet apart. The wind blows exactly in straight lines in 6 feet. And when you get on an airplane, you better put on that mask. But when you're eating and drinking, you take it off because COVID knows when you're eating and drinking. All right. So you're going back to what you're saying about what they're doing with all the anti-Semitism and everything else. You got a bunch of maniacs in charge. End the story. You don't ask a lunatic why they're a lunatic. You don't ask a murderer why they're a murderer.
Charlie, do you have anything for Gerald?
Yeah, I do. Gerald, you made a career out of noticing patterns. We've got 2020. We saw authoritarian overreach, Summer of Love rioting leading into an election. Here we are, 2024. What do you know? Same thing. We're starting to ramp up. It's riot season. We're coming into summer. We've got an election a couple months away. What other patterns are you recognizing that we may be walking into?
The country's going to crap. Whoever wins, it's going to be a split deal. There's going to be hatred on either side. And again, you know, I can't stand Trump. I can't stand Biden. I'm a political atheist. I don't believe in the system at all. And so I only call things the way they are. Now, a magazine, the Trends Journal, we called Trump a winner back in May of 2016 when everybody said he would lose. Now it's a toss-up. Nobody knows what's going to happen. But the division in this country has never been like this in my lifetime, where the hatred on both sides is so strong. This country is just going to devolve, and there's going to be more and more of our rights stolen from us, regardless of who gets into office. And so that's where I don't know who's going to win, but whoever wins, we lose, is the way I see it. Again, it's a crime syndicate, and that people call a government. I mean, look how many billions of dollars you need to run for office. You got that little clown down there in Texas, this little Beto O'Rourke, a little boy of nothing. What did he spend? $100 million to lose against another clown, Abbott, like Abbott and Costello. You got another that in Abrams over there, Stacey Abrams in Georgia. $100 million to lose. You call this a... You were mentioning before about a democracy. You spelt it wrong. D-U-H, duh, M-O-C-K, mock-racy. Democracy. So it makes no difference. We lose no matter what happens. We don't have, and again, you know, I had my last rally I had last May. I had Dennis Kucinich as one of the speakers. You know, he's been a peace candidate for, you know, ever. And he was RFK Jr.'s campaign manager. And I supported RFK Jr. until he came out with, you know, as Palestinians are the most spoiled people on earth.
Yeah.
Ignorant crap. I spoke to Kennedy a couple of times. I donated the most amount of money to him that I could get, that I was allowed to donate. I got it all back. I don't support him. There's no third party. There's no third party in this country. Oh, we're talking about these other countries that we invade to bring freedom and democracy? We don't have it here. So the elections mean nothing.
What do you think happened with Kucinich there, Gerald? Do you think because that was pretty strange the way they parted ways?
You know, they invited me down when Kennedy announced he was running as an independent. And Kucinich, of course, you know, I know the guy, you know. And 2 days later, he was gone. And who did Kennedy bring in to take his place? His daughter-in-law? What was the last job? With the CIA?
Yeah.
So that's what happened.
Do you think his ridiculous over-the-top support of Israel had something to do with it?
I don't know. And Kucinich won't say anything.
Yeah.
Gerald, this is coming out of, well, it's a conversation I heard you talk about years ago. And I was just, while you were replying, I was thinking of your friendship that you had with John Connolly. And I wanted you, we were just talking about, I'm in gold and silver business, and I talk with David every week about the trends in precious metals and what's happening with the currency. And of course, John Connolly was head of the Treasury under Nixon. And that's when, you know, that was a move that he and Nixon made together. And my friend, Congressman Ralph Hall, he was the last World War II veteran in Congress. He was friends with John Connolly, and they always had this. He told me, he would joke with Connolly about whenever Connolly would start running for something again, he put that brace back on, you know, that he could, or the magic bullet, you know, from riding in the car with Kennedy. He'd give John a hard time. He's, oh, you're running for something again. I see you got your brace on to tell people that's where the bullet entered. But, you know, Connolly was involved in that. And that's interesting. You know, that's the theory where, of course, you know, Don Jeffries here has done, you know, research on the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
Since Mark Lane, you know, back in the early 70s, Don?
Mid 70s, yeah.
In 70s. And, you know, and so that was where you get the concept of the magic bullet theory. And of course, Connolly was around for the modern monetary system, which is the magic money tree, as David calls it.
Well, Gerald told the story. I hope he tells it again. I think he told it on my show. It's a fascinating story when Connolly basically admitted, because publicly Connolly always supported even though he disputed the single bullet theory, but he either didn't understand or whatever that proved that there had to be two assassins. But whatever, he claimed there were two bullets. But he still thought Oswald did it alone, which made no sense. But behind the scenes, he was different. And I've heard from a couple of people, you had a fascinating story where you were a young guy and he basically talked about the conspiracy, didn't he?
What happened was one of my books, Trend Tracking, far better than Megatrends, Time Magazine. And I wrote this. This came out in 1989. And in this book, I had forecast that the people were tied with the two parties and there'd be a third-party candidate and someone like Ross Perot would be it. So now Connolly wanted to meet me. And I fly out to meet him in Dallas. This is 1992, 2 weeks before the presidential election when Clinton ran against Bush and Ross Perot. And it's their first time back to the book depository since the assassination. There was myself, a guy by the name of John J. Hooker, who put the meeting together, and Rama Fox, who was Larry King's girlfriend, and Pat Cadell, the pollster.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cadell was doing the polling for Perot.
Yeah.
And we're parked out in front of the book depository. That's the side where they allegedly shot him from. And Connolly started telling the story. We're in a limousine. Started telling the story what happened that day. I have a photograph, by the way, of me, him, and Nellie in front of the book depository on the side. Anyway, he goes on to say, he said, we were coming down. And he said, I heard a gunshot. He said, I knew it was a gunshot because I've been hunting since I'm a little boy. And I looked over to my right, and I didn't see anything. That was the grassy knoll. And he said, I was scrunched up into the jump seat. They had jump seats in those days in the backs of the car. He said, I was holding my hat on my knee, and I look over to my left shoulder, and there were brains on my shoulder. He said, I knew there were brains because my daddy was a butcher. And then he goes, and I'm sitting right across from him in the limousine. He goes, and then I felt a pounding on my back. And that's when the bullet went through his back. And he goes flying over. And you see the video of Nelly throwing himself on top of him. That's what saved his life, by the way, because he's scrunched up. He goes flying over. The bullet goes through his back, through his chest, through his hand, through his knee. And he said it took about 12 minutes to get to the Parkland Hospital. He said it usually takes about 20. There was a doctor that was taking a break that saw the things come screaming in, the cars, and he runs down into the emergency room, this doctor, and he was the doctor was a thoracic surgeon that worked on Connolly, who got his lungs blown out. What saved his life was Nellie on top of him, hysterical, because if the air went into his lungs, he would have suffocated. But her hand on it, his hand on it, and her laying on top of it stopped the air going through. Oh, by the way, I'm sitting across from him, and his hands had all this purplish stuff on it. And I said, how you feeling? He said, not good. He said, I have adhesions in my lungs, and he got me on prednisone. And I watched my father, may he rest in peace, die of when they put him on prednisone because he worked in the shipyards, and he got asbestos poisoning from the shipyards. And they had him on the prednisone. So I saw my father dying like that. And I knew Connolly was going to go soon. And he did. He died in April. And we stayed in contact from October to February. Anyway, as we're walking back into the Anatole Hotel, he said to me, I read your book. He said, it's a fine piece of work. And he said, I know your heart's in the right place. He said, but you don't have a clue what's going on. And neither do the American people. Because if they did, there'd be a revolution in this country. This is 1992. And as you mentioned, this is the guy that was not only the Democratic governor of Texas, he was the Treasury Secretary under Nixon that took us off the gold standard.
Yes. He ran for president in 1980, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
As a Republican.
Yep.
But didn't he say something specifically to you about that there was a conspiracy to kill JFK, or he didn't believe the official story?
No.
Okay.
No, because I didn't want to be disrespectful. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I didn't want to ask him any other questions. I just let him say what he wanted to say. And I was so honored, you know, to be there. But I'm just telling you what he said about, you know, that, you know, I heard a gunshot. Mm-hmm. And that was the grassy knoll where they said there were no gunshots coming from. And he said, I've been hunting since I'm a little boy. So he knew exactly what he was talking about.
It was the publication of your book that's kind of linked you to Connolly. Did he want to speak with you about anything specific other than the role and trends?
No, he wanted to talk about the election. And so what happened that night, this story goes on. You know, we go back up to his suite and Ross Perot's on with, I think it was Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes. And again, this is 2 weeks. Cadell was through the roof. He said, Perot's rates are skyrocketing. I have never seen anything like this in my life. Perot goes on with I think it was Leslie Stahl. And she said, how come, you know, that you didn't campaign during the summer? He goes, well, you know, he said, my daughter was getting married and I didn't want to disrupt the wedding for anything. And I didn't want. And I said, this is the end of it. We're all there, Cadell, myself. We were all watching it with Connolly, and I looked at everybody. I said, "This is finished." Matter of fact, I was going to stay overnight in Dallas, and this is 1992 when, you know, it was different kind of flying. I left that night because I said, "This is over. I don't want to hang around," and so that's what killed Perot, that interview. He was skyrocketing, and he still got 19% of the vote.
Yes, 19%. Yeah.
Right.
But he was ahead in the polls before that.
And he was flying in the polls. And that's the kill. By the way, I began my career. You know, I'm a lucky guy. I got out of graduate school, again, trying to beat the draft. And I was working at my sister's place, Grace's Lucky Lounge. My sister opened up the second topless go-go lounge in New York City. And my mother passed away. Is very young, and I had two younger sisters. So I moved back to Yonkers to help my father take care of him. I said, what the hell am I going to do? I didn't want to work. And there was this guy running for mayor, Angelo Martinelli. I got involved in political campaigns. I became the campaign coordinator. And he became the longest running mayor of Yonkers. And I'm working on major campaigns in Westchester County. And they sent me up to Albany. I became the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate. I designed and instructed a course called American Politics and Campaign Technology, how to run political campaigns. And I taught it at St. John's University. You know, I was at the top of this thing. So I knew how these campaigns were being run. And the reason, by the way, I hit the top so quick is because the people that are in the campaign business are the stupid, arrogant, moronic people that you could find anywhere, any place that are looking for a job because they can't get one in the real world. These aren't the brightest cats on the planet. And again, I'm a kid. You know, I grew up in the Bronx. I'm working all my life. You know, we didn't get allowances or anything like that. You know, we're on your own. So I hit the top really quick. So I knew how these campaigns are run. So Perot had a huge chance of overthrowing this government, but he messed it up on his own.
Did you feel like that was some kind of? Was he threatened? It always seemed to me, because, you know, I was 12 years old at the time, but I was following the election. I was very interested in, and it looked like Perot, like you said, and he was on the cover of all the magazines, and I was in Texas at the time in Dallas, and it seemed like he had so much momentum, and then it stopped. And like you said, he's like, well, I didn't want to disrupt my daughter's wedding, and then he stops, and he comes back in just enough to skew the election, kind of like Teddy Roosevelt did.
Yeah.
In 1912, away from the establishment to, well, whatever you consider what was going to Wilson from Taft. But that's the same thing from Bush to Clinton. So do you feel like there was some, engineering?
I don't know. But, you know, the thing was, the reason I knew he could win, I made my name what I call the 1987 stock market crash. The Wall Street Journal even covered it. So people forget, you know, what was going on and how bad things were, you know, after the crash. And by the way, under Reagan, under Bush, They both tried to push through NAFTA, and it failed. And then Clinton came in, and he's the one that got it through. People forget that. There was major protests against NAFTA. And, of course, Perot was against it as well. And so the people were looking, just as so many people are disgusted now with the two-party system, they felt the same way back then. But again, you're not allowed to have a third party in this country. So I don't know if he was paid off, bought off, or whatever. You know, I don't know.
That was it's almost impossible. Like, I saw the headline today, Gerald. It was on Zero Hedge. Trump is going to address the Libertarian Party.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell is happening? Like, what?
Mr. Asset Forfeiture.
Third parties have any voice or life of their own? I mean, what is going on?
You know, I spoke at the Libertarian event last year, Rage Against the War Machine, down in D.C. You know, so I definitely support the Libertarian process. But you know, Trump is no Libertarian. My God. You know, it's like he's the worst from it, you know.
It's the farthest, it's a statist, crony capitalist, you know, most farthest thing away from libertarian. I can't even remember the last, Gary Johnson, you only remember him for his gaffes.
Yeah, again, they haven't had a good candidate. I wanted Judge Napolitano to run. We're very good friends, but he doesn't want to do it.
You know, he'd been a great candidate. I mean, what do you see? I know you've mentioned this before and talking about, different ideas. Like, how do you start an opposition in the country when it's just controlled by the duopoly of the two parties, Gerald?
You need money behind it. Can't happen without dough. That's the end of the story. You got to get a billionaire. You got to get the multimillionaires behind you. Again, you know, by the way, I had lunch with Trump's brother, Robert, who passed away. I'm up in Kingston, New York. He was down in Wissahick and not far from here. And I think it was Wissahick, name like that. Anyway, and, if you would describe what his brother was like, as my aunt would have said, he could have passed in the street. You know, he's like a nothing guy. Trump's old man left him almost $500 million. There's another guy born on third base, you know. Trump and I are the same age. When I was a kid, one of my books is What Zizzy Gave Honey Boy. Zizzy's a Neapolitan dialect for auntie. Growing up in the Bronx, and every time he got out of hand, they threatened to send us to military school. You little bastard, we had enough of your crap, you're going to military school. And I'll be good, I won't go. All right, so here you are. You're a teenager. What are you thinking about? You're thinking about chicks, cars, and sports. And my mother being an Italian, great cook. Am I going to go to military school? Dress up in that? Trump was so out of his mind, so narcissistic, they sent him to military school. Up in Cornwall, New York, which is about an hour south of where I am in Kingston. In the middle of nowhere. That's how narcissistic this guy was. Sending him away to camp. Because he was so out of control. He's only about himself. That's all he cares about.
Well, I think that's pretty apparent.
Well, yeah, he had a very strange family dynamic, too. Both his parents. I think it's people have said that Trump was probably, certainly was almost never told he was loved by either of his parents. He had some strange parents. So I think he kind of turned out the way he did, predictably, I think.
Yeah, one of his brothers committed suicide, his older brother, right?
Drank himself
to death, something like that.
Yeah, that's what Trump said, he never drank or smoked or something.
Yeah. But yeah, no, again, we don't have anybody that's concerned about us. You know, I had that article over here, I'm looking for it, about his son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
He's not coming to save you either. I can assure you.
I'm saying that valuable waterfront property over there. We got to get rid of the people over there, and we'll put the people in the desert. That's genocide.
Yeah,
sounds like the Morgenthau plan. Remember the Morgenthau plan? Secretary of the Treasury under FDR wanted to basically make Germany a agricultural backwater and completely dismantle all manufacturing and business and economics and force the German. That's like Morgenthau.
Tony, I'll have a lot more about that. You know, my book, American Memory Hole, will have the court historians promote disinformation. It's coming out in August. And I have a lot in there about the Morgenthau plan. And, you know, he was Secretary of the Treasury.
Yes.
Which is an odd position to be so involved in wanting to starve Germans. But he was maybe the most crazy person, because he was too crazy even for most of FDR's people. Because, yeah, you're literally right. He wanted to. And that goes down today, which we see. And there was a guy that published a book in the early 2000s. I can't remember his name, but I mentioned it in my book that, again, basically blamed all Germans for Hitler. So I said, you know, so even toddlers, even babies, the ones we didn't kill at Dresden were blamed. So this kind of hatred is there. And I think you see it kind of coming out now in this built outlaw anti-Semitism. I'm watching that really closely. I watch Jason Whitlock a lot, the Fearless podcast. Great. He's doing a great job. And a lot of blacks, they're really pushing this thing about what is Zionism? What is anti-Semitism? And, you know, typical white people could never do that without saying, hey, what are you talking about? You know, just even to question it. But so it's be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. Here it is. Jared Kushner has praised the very valuable potential of Gaza's, quote, waterfront property. This is his quote. It's a little, by the way, he was speaking at Harvard. You know, like George Carlin used to say, you know, it's one big club and you ain't in it. It's a little bit unfortunate situation there, but from Israel, wait a minute, a little bit of an unfortunate situation, a little unfortunate situation, slaughtering what, about 40,000 people, demolishing the whole place. Oh, it's a little bit unfortunate, but from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out of there and clean it up. Could you imagine if there were Jewish people in Gaza and the Palestinians were bombing them, and a Palestinian said, I would do my best to move the people out of there and clean it up? Oh my God, how could you say that? Hey, but Jared Kushner could say it. He's Trump's son-in-law. Then he goes on to say, I would just bulldoze something like the Negev and finish the job by moving the Palestinians to Negev, the Negev desert. I would finish the job. I would try
to move the people there.
I think that's a better option. You ready? So you can go in and finish the job. Oh, to make it waterfront property.
Yeah.
By somebody, the definition, that's genocide.
As somebody who's worked for real estate developers for over 25 years, do not let real estate developers near the levers of power. They are scumbags by nature.
Yep.
They will.
Scooby-Doo taught us that. That's always the lesson in Scooby-Doo.
Jared Kushner's dad, Charles, who Trump pardoned, gave $1 million to a Trump super PAC. Charles Kushner, the father of Donald Trump's son-in-law and the recipient of one of the former president's final pardons, donated $1 million to Trump. All right.
And his father, I talked about that in Survival of the Richest. His father, Charles Kushner, was... He donated enough money to name a building after him or something. He was either Harvard or Yale, and that's the only way. Jared, he's like the athletes, you know, a lot of these sons of the whip, they're not real students. Jared Kushner had no business being there, but his father basically paid his way in.
Yep. No, it's disgusting what's going on. It's a crime syndicate. Here. It is our true policy to steer clear of permanent alliance with any portion of the foreign world. Observe good faith and justice toward all nations. Cultivate peace and honor with all. The nation which indulges toward another in habitual hatred or an habitual fondness, in some degree a slave. It is a slave to its animosity or to its affection, either of which is sufficient to lead it astray from its duty and interests. A passionate attachment of one nation for another produces a variety of evils. George Washington.
Farewell address.
Farewell address. Mm-hmm. Fuck George Washington. Hey, I'm what's like that guy's name? Lloyd Austin. Yeah.
Sounds like an insurgent.
My last job was at Raytheon, the second largest defense contractor in America. Tell Washington to go to hell.
He can be reached at Walter Reed half the time or wherever he's hospitalized or disappears into.
Yep. Yeah, and when he's not there, general pronouns is in charge.
Right. Yeah. They used to read George Washington's farewell address up until the 1930s in Congress. I don't know if you knew that, Gerald, but they would. No. That was such a part of our American character. All of this, like this monstrous thing that we've become, this hideous, you know, it's like, I think Gore Vidal said it was like we became some sort of like werewolf or something, like we were bitten by the werewolf of empire. And we just threw away all of the wisdom of the founding fathers. I mean, John Quincy Adams said it best. He said, America's not designed to go abroad in search of monsters to destroy.
Yep.
But absolutely. We're everywhere all the time. And I mean, you've been sounding the warning bell for a long time. And I know that as this accelerates, it's got to be pretty hard on you because you're watching it almost. I think we all are, if we're paying attention. They're kicking every which way. They're kicking the levers, trying to knock something over enough to where we can have a kinetic war. There's no off-ramps.
I have to read, you know, the magazine, you get it. It was like 185 pages this week, you know. It's a weekly. And I got to read all this stuff. And I cry when I see the pictures of things. I cry. I cry about this. You know, I own three. If you Google up most historic four corners in America, Kingston, New York. I was looking to leave the country in 2010. Getting over a cold. The Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner, Obama, I couldn't stand that little folks who's always folking us, you know. And you know, Gaddafi has to go, you know, Assad has to go anyway. And there was nowhere I wanted to go. And I was doing a gig over in Berlin. I'd never been there before. And this is in 2012, April 17th, I got there. And they're showing me all around East Berlin, by the way. And about in the afternoon, I'm sitting outside with these people and beautiful sidewalks wide enough for cafe tables, four and five deep sidewalks with people walking and bicycling. They're so wide. And I spent a lot of time in Paris. I used to date a French woman. And I said, you know, Berlin was grander than Paris before they bombed it out. And I'm thinking in the 1930s, the Germans were at the height of Western civilization in so many ways, culturally, philosophically, scientifically. And I'm looking across the street and I see this beautiful, you know, German building, you know, about 1880s and all new construction. And I realized everywhere they took me, that's what I saw, all new construction. And I said, how come the people didn't stop this when you're losing? Where were the people to stop it? I came back and there was a for sale sign on the Franz Rogan building in Kingston. It's a 1750s building. And I bought it. I came back on April 27th. They took possession of the building on June 1st. I paid cash for it. I realized I can't run away. I'm only me because I'm a Napolitano, born in the Bronx, born to be free. This is my country. The seeds of democracy were sown in Kingston. This is a third Dutch settlement right across the street from me where the courthouse is. The Constitution written for New York State, Kingston was the first capital. The British burnt it down after the Battle of Saratoga. Then they moved to Albany. Over 70% of the Constitution was written over there, and John Jay was a judge. I ended up buying these other three buildings. The other one's a museum. Because I realized I'm an American. Love it or leave it. No, you leave it. Don't you tell me what to do. So that's why I bought these buildings. Because, again, I'm only me. I'm born in 1946, right after the war. The energy is at the height. I come home crying one day. I was a premature baby. One of my brothers and sisters over 6 feet, 5'8", my sisters. And I come home crying one day. My father said, what are you crying about? I said, I got beat up. He said, you don't come home crying. I became the toughest kid. I was the smallest, but I was the fastest. And again, I taught close combat for many years. I'm a fighter, but I'm for peace. I only attack the attacker. That's why I bought these buildings, because the seeds of democracy were sown here in America, and we've lost it to little boys. Hey, little Mikey, yeah, Mikey Johnson, who the F are you to tell me what to do? Don't you talk to me like that. No, you got it wrong, boy. You don't talk to me like that. You're a public servant. Got it, Junior? Oh, look at the way he's talking to me. I don't like that. Watch your language. All right, that's who they are. You call these guys out man to man. They don't know whether to piss or shit. They fold like that. And that's what the American people have to do. Stand up. This is my country, not yours. That's the way I feel.
You are an American treasure, sir. I wish if I could bottle that and manufacture it and just get it out there, I'm just for free. Please just, you know, that we need passion again. We've been so beat down and cycled through these psyops and mind control, everything that's been, we've been hit from every direction. You mentioned earlier, Gerald, about 6 feet apart. And COVID doesn't bother you if you sit down and if at a table and it, you got to go through. Remember the directions through supermarkets. You can only go.
It's science, Tony.
That's
come
to
on,
break your will.
Certain things were taped off. Like if you couldn't buy certain things, nonsense. It made no sense at all. They're just
also a litmus test, right? If you're running a psychological operation, let's measure the baseline. Where are we? How compliant are these morons? Will they stand on the dot? They won't stand on the dot before they get on an airplane to sit 4 inches next to the person on either side of them. Are you out of your mind? If they'll stand on the dot before they get on an airplane, you've got them.
And as Gerald talked about that and not being able to eat with that mask on, that was one of the things I was raging about to begin with, this unbelievable thing where you had to have a mask on to enter a restaurant. But as soon as you got to your table, you could take it off. So apparently, I put in Masking the Truth in my book, that's the most banned book in the history of the world, shadow banned book in the world about all this stuff. I talked about how Fauci, it was revealed behind the scenes, this guy revealed his book that Fauci, he particularly thought that was hilarious, how people obeyed that stupid restaurant rule. Behind the scenes, he was laughing hysterically at you, being dumb enough to think a virus could get you as you were walking in the restaurant, but you were perfectly safe as soon as you got to the table. It's ridiculous.
And look at the people that followed. Yeah. Again, I had a peace and freedom rally here when everything was locked down. And boy, was I hated for it. I had over 1,000 people here. I have a big garden on the Franz Rogan house where I have my rallies. They hate me for it. We all died, by the way. We all died from the virus. So this isn't really me that's here.
That's
and I said, hey, little Andy Cuomo, you come down here and you try to close me down. Come on down. Another little daddy's boy. Renaming the Tappan Zee Bridge after my daddy. The Mario M. Cuomo Bridge. You forgot to put the M. Take down the $30 million. I'm not making this crap up. But look at all the people that followed. Remember, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men since Samuel Adams. And us, the irate, tireless minority must unite. Again, you got to call these guys out. Don't you tell me what to do. Don't you tell me what to do. You know, by the way, again, I've been at this a lot of years. The only way I see this happening is the same way the Berlin Wall came down. People forgot. People went there, stayed, didn't leave. Next day, more people came. 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 Until they outnumbered the guys that were trying to stop them, you know, by 10,000 to 1. Whoop, the wall came down. We need a rally of millions, tens of millions in Washington, D.C., locking the place down. No, we're in charge. You're not. That's the only way I see it. Think about it. Hong Kong. I used to be on Hong Kong TV before COVID war. And that's what they ended the protest, by the way. And city is 7.5 million people. A million people were taking to the streets out of 7.5 million. You can't get a million people out of 332 million in America to protest.
Well, don't you think January 6th had, when they saw the overreaction to that, I think a lot, that really killed, I think, a lot of people's desires. It'd be interesting at the election, though, to see if they protest if it goes to Biden again. Yeah.
You know, I want to go back, you know, you talked about gold before and what's going to happen. We're going to have the worst financial crisis in the history of the world, part one and part two. Yeah. And no one's talking about it. And that's the office buildings are going bust. Your office vacancy rate in, again, not my numbers, the facts, in San Francisco, vacant, 36.7%. It was 3.6% in 2019. Portland, Oregon, 29% vacant. New York City, 23% vacant. Vacant. On average, 20% of the buildings in the major cities in New York, in America, are vacant. Vacant. How are they going to pay their loans? Oh, these are interest-only loans, by the way. So with interest rates up, it's twice the cost to renew your loan. $4 trillion of loans are coming up in the next 2.5 years. $4 trillion. You have no tenants there. How are you going to pay your loans? The banks are going to go bust. This is going to be a crisis they're not going to be able to handle. But again, when all else fails, they take you to war. What followed the Great Depression? World War II. What followed the dot-com bust? The war on terror. What followed the Hamas attack? What preceded it? 39 weeks of protests in Israel that everybody's forgotten because of Netanyahu's Judicial Reform Act. And not my language, the language out of another piece of scum, the president of Israel, Isaac Herzog, who said, God gave us this land. You know, how about if I don't believe in your God? Can you handle that one? But anyway, he said there's a civil war going on in Israel. There was a civil war going on in Israel. 39 weeks of protest against Netanyahu, Hamas attack, everybody forgot it. Right. They're going to do the same thing again.
Well,
it's going to be a financial crisis, the likes of which we've never seen.
And gold, you're right about them not being able to handle it, Gerald.
Top trends for 2024 was a golden year for gold. Gold's up over $300 since then.
Well, you know this as well as anybody. It's not so much the gold's going up, the dollar's going down. It's an inversion. You know, the dollar's losing purchasing power. It's the money velocity slowing around the world, and the percentage of usage of the dollar is collapsing after all the sanctions. We have 40 sanctions on 36 different countries. And you mentioned San Francisco, Gerald. They were trying to pass a law to force businesses to stay, the ones that are fleeing because of the crime rate from these Soros DAs, and of course the collapse of the commercial property value that's coming, and the overall calamity. I mean,
don't forget the grocery stores having to give 6 months notice to the people before they up and leave.
You know, again, it was the geeks that locked down first,
right?
What's that guy with the guy
Jack Dorsey
have Twitter?
Dorsey.
Yeah, he was supposed to go to South Africa. We wrote about in the magazine as it was happening in February. He canceled it. Everybody has to go home and work. And they were the ones, and they made all that dough by people not going out, and the whole, you know, internet business boomed. So they made a lot of dough by people forcing people to work at home. And again, people now, they're staying at home. They're saying, but commuting an hour and a half each way, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm not going to do that anymore. And again, if I had 10 stories in an office building, I don't see all these people in cubicles anyway. Yeah, stay home. I don't need all this space. No, this is serious. You know, they got it wrong in the King James Bible. They say the meek shall inherit the earth. The geeks have inherited the earth.
I love that. Well, no, Gerald, I think we're
sucked over with the reality. The music stinks. Everything's fake. It's all fake crap.
Yes, with real consequences. And we're coming towards the end of the show here. Gerald, I want to make sure I gave you plenty of time to plug. Of course, you're the founder of the Trends Journal. I subscribe. Go check out trendsjournal.com and Occupy Peace. Anything else you want to? I just, first of all, thank you for coming on. I was filling in for David and giving him a day off. And I've wanted to talk to you. It's been too long. It's been 4 years. So I just enjoyed going over some current events and history with you. It's always fascinating, sir. Thank you.
Well, thank you. By the way, if the people go to Knight, I think it's knight.com, and you put up the,
thedavidknightshow.com, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a link on there for the Trends. You can sign up for the Trends Journal.
And you get 10% off. So, of course, yes. It's a grand total of $2.50 a week. Nothing. You're not going to find, if 30-day money back guaranteed, there's no loss at all. It's a total gain. Again, there's no magazine like it. And I want to thank all you guys, for being on with you. I really appreciate all you do. It's an honor for me to be with you, and I appreciate it very much. And again, I'm heartbroken to see what's happened to this country. And again, as an Napolitano, we cry, we're very passionate. Yeah. And then, don't screw with me, I'll slit your throat. We go from there to 10-0. Zero. There's nothing in the middle about us.
Exactly right.
And again, I'm proud to be an American, and I'm very sad to see the demise of this country taken over by little freaks.
I am too, sir.
Well, I appreciate you so much, Gerald. I quoted you in my first book with what you said the motto of the mainstream media should be: today's news tomorrow, retractions to follow.
Yeah.
So thank you for everything that you've been doing over the years. I've been watching you for a long, long time.
Thank you so much.
And you can find Charlie's host of Macro Aggressions, the podcast served up pretty much anywhere. And you've got macroaggressions.io
is the website. Yeah. And the Octopus of Global Control is now out as an audiobook. It only took 7 years, but it is available now. So go get it. 23 hours of information for a long car ride or maybe a flight or wherever.
And of course, DonaldJeffries.media and your Substack. Talk about your latest article and what's up at Substack.
Yeah, I wrote, I think Gerald would appreciate it. I wrote, because conservatives really irritate me with they continue to be enamored with the police. And I think the police are an occupied military force at this point. So I wrote something called The Standing Army of the State. And it's on LouRockwell.com. Zero Hedge publishes some of my stuff now too. But that's the only place I'm not shadow banned. So I protest at Substack, DonaldJeffries.substack.com. So I certainly appreciate it. And obviously an honor to be with Tony and Charlie, but certainly Gerald Celente. I'm one of your biggest fans, so it's great to share the stage with you.
Oh, I'm honored to be with you guys. Thank you for all that you do. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Gerald. Yeah. And again, you can go to thedavidknightshow.com. There's a link on there for to sign up for the Trends Journal. You can not only support David, but you can support Gerald Celente, and just appreciate your passion. I was looking forward to this segment. I wasn't quite sure how it would work with the panel, because I talked to Don and Charlie before I knew you were coming on. I thought, well, I'll keep them. We'll see how it works. And it went great. So I loved every minute of it. And just for the audience, you can support David, thedavidknightshow.com. Be sure, if you can't donate, share the links. It's just word of mouth. Everything helps the show. It stay on air. And of course, gold and silver, davidknight.gold. I proudly sponsor this program, and any transaction, no matter how big or small, doesn't matter. We don't discriminate. We have a monthly membership program called Wolfpack. You can use the promo code 1776. Go to davidknight.gold, promo code 1776. I built a precious metals program for the people. I did what the bigs didn't do, and I was targeted everyday people, and you can start as low as $50 a month to get precious metals, and I give you a detailed invoice. We buy in bulk. We've got over 1,000 members, and I also have a program for kids called Wolf Cub. And you can go and check. That's $35, and you get a little lesson in there. And I meticulously go through everything for Wolf Cub to make sure the kids are learning something. We don't even really make money on that tier, but it's fun. I'm going to play the outro. As always, such an honor to fill in for the great David Knight. To David and his family, thank you for thinking of me. And Guard, thanks for coming on. And Mr. Anderson, Chris Graves, appreciate you both. All right. End of transmission, ladies and gentlemen.